And here, the Turks had an advantage that only became evident later, and that was in their Ghazi warriors. Most of them are but names to us. They were celebrated in legend. They're conceived as defenders of Islam and the jihad, that is the holy war. I suspect most of them really had very little notion of what Islam was. It was a folk Islam. Furthermore, the Sultan and Konya, or the other rulers, really had very little control over these Ghazi warriors. We find repeated instances where the Byzantine emperors try to sign a treaty with the Sultan and Konya, and they agree, okay, we'll stop the war and recognize borders. But that treaty had no meaning to the various lords and Ghazis on the grasslands of Anatolia. They were reared on that tradition of fighting, of gaining grasslands, increasing the size of their herds. And that's not an inconsiderable point. Because when these Turks moved in from Central Asia, they came from a background where they were used to huge grasslands, where they could rear tremendous herds of horses. And you have to realize, to mount the type of light cavalry that the Turks used, you need maybe 10 mounts, 15 mounts. We know of Mongol riders in the 13th century having 20, 25 horses. Now, it doesn't take much imagination to look at the plateau of Anatolia and realize it's very much a miniature of Central Asia. When the Turks moved into that plateau, they found grassland was scarce. There was a constant impulse to expand, to drive, to find more grasslands. So while the Sultan and Konya might sign a treaty with the Byzantine emperor, the Ghazis just laughed at it, tore it up if they even bothered to try to read it, and simply continued to wage war to capture more territory because they needed it for their horses, they needed it for their grazing. And so from the start, there is this drive to expand, which is a combination of a martial ethos, a need to increase the grasslands at the expense of agriculturalists, and a very loose control imposed on these warrior societies by the existing Turkish governments on the plateau. So in the long run, the Byzantine emperors really faced an uneven struggle, and it was complicated by the fact that the Byzantine emperors really couldn't devote their energies to this struggle because they had to deal with those Western Europeans, those crusaders, who distracted so many of their efforts. Well, that explains the advantages the Turks had, and by the middle of the 13th century, it was clear that the military advantage was shifting to the Turkish side. And I think the sultans of Konya could have achieved a decisive victory over the remnants of the Byzantines had it not been for the unfortunate fact that the Mongols showed up. And the Mongols are nothing more than the Islam's worst nightmare. The Mongols are absolutely invincible hordes out of Central Asia. In 1243, a Mongol army burst into Asia Minor and absolutely destroyed the Turkish army at a famous battle called Kursa Dağ, and that led to the political fragmentation of Turkish Asia Minor. But had it not been for that Mongol invasion, there's a good chance that the sultans in Konya might have presided over the conquest of the former Byzantine Empire and united the peninsula. Well, even though these sultans in Konya did not succeed in as the political heirs of Constantinople, they did preside over the transformation of the peninsula into this Muslim land, into this final religious and cultural rewrite of the peninsula of Asia Minor. And here they had some important advantages. For one, by the opening of the 13th century, it was clear that that image of the primacy of Orthodox civilization was tarnished. The sack of Constantinople clearly sent a signal that the Byzantine world as a political and cultural force was finished. Many of the Greek and Orthodox populations under Turkish control or subject to the Ghazi lords began to conclude that there would never be a recovery, that the emperor in Constantinople was gone. And over the course of the 13th century, there are some indications, particularly in the dedications of the few churches we have at the time, that increasingly Christians in Asia Minor under Turkish rule are beginning to conclude that they are going to live in a second-class status, that there will not be one of these remarkable Byzantine recoveries or revivals that we had seen in the past 500 years. And that's an important fact to stress. Second, the Islam of the Turks, to be sure, it was a folk Islam, and most of the Turkish warriors had a very, very dim sense of what the tenets of Islam were. They latched on to a holy war. The Ghazis loved it. It was just a justification to go out and do what they've always done.